Well, good morning and welcome back. It's the Faith Radio Network. In a day when the intent of our founding fathers has been reinterpreted by the courts, is it time for we the people to hold a constitutional convention? One group is planning a trial run this week in Colonial Williamsburg, Virginia. And here to fill us in on that is Mike Ferris. He's the Chancellor of Patrick Henry College and the Chairman of the Homeschool Legal Defense Association. Good morning, Michael.
Hi, Bill. Good to be with you.
So it seems like many of our leaders today either ignore the Constitution or try to redefine what it says. Can you remind our Faith Radio listeners why the U.S. Constitution is still so critical both today and for our nation's future?
Well, the importance of the Constitution and its centrality is best probably symbolized and found in the fact that all of the oaths that we take are to support and defend the Constitution of the United States. If you join the military, if you get sworn in as a member of the bar, if you get sworn in as president of the United States, any public office, you're not promising to obey the president. You're not promising loyalty to the country. It's loyalty to the Constitution that you will support and defend it. And that tells us that that's supposed to be our operating premise as a nation. And but the Constitution only really operates if we're following also the rule of law, meaning that the only way we change the Constitution is by the process that is set out in the Constitution in Article 5. The president can't change it unilaterally. The Supreme Court can't change it. The states can't change it. Congress can't change it. No one can change it unilaterally. You have to follow the process of Article 5. And so that's what we're trying to do, is to follow the process of Article 5 to call a convention of states. It's somewhat similar to a constitutional convention, but there are important differences. And that is that a constitutional convention, you can rewrite the entire thing. A convention of states, you can propose amendments on particular topics that have been defined by the state legislatures when they call for the convention.
Now, from a worldview perspective, Mike, how did our founders' beliefs about God and their beliefs about human nature impact the writing of the Constitution and what we read in it?
Well, the reason we have a written Constitution and the reason Britain doesn't have a written Constitution flows from Christian history, effectively. Our country was founded in an era and in a theological setting where the written word of God was considered the standard, as opposed to the king and the bishops, the convocation of bishops that controlled England. And so when people control the country, then your duty is to obey those leaders. But when a written constitution, it flows from our view that the written word of God itself is the highest law, higher than anything any church leader says, higher than anything that the king in his ecclesiastical capacity said. The Bible is the written standard. And so we arose out of that. The first written constitution in the history of the world, even though the Magna Carta, was a precursor of a sort, the Mayflower Compact Pact was a precursor of a sort. The first actual written constitution was called the Fundamental Orders of Connecticut, and it was a church, actually a group of three churches that were served by the same pastor named Thomas Hooker in Connecticut that wrote the first written constitution in the history of the world. And it arose out of their Christian worldview and out of the view that the written word is the controlling law for the church, and the written word is supposed to be the controlling law for the country in the form of the Constitution.
Now, there is often an argument from political liberals in our country that the Constitution is outdated or that it is a quote, living, breathing document that can change based on modern interpretation. Now, on the other hand, political conservatives tend to favor a more original intent approach. Which of those views is going to help our nation as we move forward?
Well, it depends on if you want a self-government or if we want a tyranny. Because if you want a self-government, then we follow this rule. Only elected legislators can make law. That's what Article 1, Section 1 of the Constitution says. And for making ordinary laws, if you're going to change the Constitution, only elected legislators, either in Congress or in state legislatures, or some combination thereof is another alternative, but only elected legislators can make the constitutional law. And so Thomas Paine said in The Rights of Man and other writings that there are only two sources of power, consent or usurpation. And whenever usurpation happens, it's tyranny, meaning if people just grant power to themselves. And so when we talk about the living constitution theory, all it is judges granting power to themselves for them to read some kind of modern tea leaves, which effectively means their own personal political philosophy, and they get to change the constitution to mean what they think it should mean. That's tyranny, because it is changing the constitution rather than following the rule of law. You know, people with an ordinary business contract want the words of the business contract to mean the same thing 20 years after it's written as it did the day it was written. And if it said, you know, the boundary line is in this particular spot between our two businesses, then that boundary line shouldn't change because, you know, well, 20 years from now, this one company's gotten a lot richer and the other one's a little poorer and, you know, one's owned by a minority. And so let's change the boundary line based on what we think is the best way to set the boundary line. No. The boundary line should mean what it meant when we wrote it. And the same thing is true for the Constitution. If we don't follow the meaning ascribed to the words by the elected officials who wrote it, then we've given to some unelected judge or some other unelected person the power to rewrite the law. And that is always tyranny.
We're talking to Mike Ferris. He's the Chancellor of Patrick Henry College and the Chairman of the Homeschool Legal Defense Association. We'll take a quick break and be right back here on the Faith Radio Network. Good morning. You're listening to Faith Radio. I'm Bill Meyer. My guest is Mike Ferris. He's the Chancellor of Patrick Henry College and the Chairman of the Homeschool Legal Defense Association. We're talking about this event, which is happening this week in Colonial Williamsburg, Virginia. Mike, let's get back to changing the U.S. Constitution. We started to address this before the break. Do you think the Constitution needs to be changed? And if so, how?
Yes, I do think the Constitution needs to be changed in order to reverse some Supreme Court decisions. And we changed the Constitution in the 13th Amendment to reverse Dred Scott. The Dred Scott decision said black people can never be citizens because they're not fully human. We reversed that with the 13th and to some degree with the 14th and 15th Amendments. The Supreme Court said women can't vote in a case called Minor versus Happersett. We reversed that with the 19th Amendment. And, you know, many other constitutional amendments have been written to reverse Supreme Court decisions. And so there's some important Supreme Court decisions that need to be reversed, and I think we need to put real checks and balances on the Supreme Court itself in order for our country to be protected from judicial activism, which is really, truly judicial tyranny, not merely activism. And so the General Welfare Clause, frankly, it was written a little ambiguously. If we would go back to its original meaning, which means if the states can spend money on a topic, the federal government can't, I think we should rewrite the General Welfare Clause to say if the states can spend money on a topic, the federal government can't. And that would take us out of the vast majority of programs that are bankrupting this country. The Commerce Clause was meant to regulate trade. And if we go, if we amend the Commerce Clause to read, the regulation of commerce means, you know, the exchange of goods and services and the transportation of passengers across state lines and not all economic activity or something like that, then federal regulation of our business world would plummet and we would, you know, be free, jobs would be created, but it's Supreme Court interpretations of the Commerce Clause and the General Welfare Clause that are essentially responsible for the vast majority of federal overreach. And so fixing those two things is really important. And then also fixing the fact that the Supreme Court is so difficult to reverse is also something that needs to be addressed, among a few other things.
What about the ruling on marriage, Mike?
Well, this particular application that we're working on calls for a convention on these topics to impose fiscal restraints on the federal government, limit the power and jurisdiction of the federal government, and to impose term limits on federal officials. And so one of the amendments that I've drafted for this simulation that's happening this week it would give the states the ability to vacate decisions of the Supreme Court. That's about federal power. And so even though it wouldn't be germane under this application to reverse the marriage decision of the Supreme Court directly, which we could do. You could call a convention for that purpose. Our application that's already passed 8 states doesn't say that directly, but we are proposing to give the states the ability to vacate the decision of the Supreme Court. So they could vacate the marriage case, they could vacate Roe versus Wade, they could vacate the Obamacare decision, they could vacate really any Supreme Court decision by a supermajority of the states. The proposal, it's an early draft is all it is, would be 30 states. If 30 states call for vacating a decision, it's gone. And so it would be a two-step methodology to achieve that goal under the plan that's working right now.
Now, you talked about limiting the ability of the Supreme Court to reinterpret the Constitution. What would actually be written into the Constitution that would prevent that from happening in the future?
Well, there are two ideas that are going to be floated at this simulated convention in Williamsburg. One is to have the states appoint the Supreme Court, and that they would only serve for 4-year terms on a rotational basis. And so the way it's written, every state would have a Supreme Court justice for 4 years out of every 16 years. So you take turns. You increase the number of the court to 13 just to make the math work out a little better. You can also take a few more cases. And I believe that having shorter terms and a different means of appointment, so the federal power grabs are really what's wrong. And when Washington D.C. gets to appoint the Supreme Court, all that does is reinforce that ability. And then also the provision we were just talking about, giving the states the ability to vacate decisions of the Supreme Court. Those are the two of the provisions that I would put in if I could wave a magic wand and make it happen all by myself, that could make that happen.
Now, some people might be concerned that this type of process could jeopardize important constitutional guarantees that already exist, like, let's say, the First Amendment. What would you say to them?
The process is safe and effective, and most of the concerns that people have about a runaway convention stem from absolutely false and malicious history about the adoption of the Constitution in 1787. People have been told for a long time that convention was a runaway convention that was only supposed to amend the Articles of Confederation, but instead it wrote a whole new Constitution. It's just not true. I wrote a 5,000 word article, a law review article about this over the last several months, and one of Harvard's law reviews called the Harvard Journal of Law and Public Policy has agreed to publish my article. So there's going to be a definitive article that sets the record straight and proves once and for all that the Constitution was adopted at a convention called by the states, and the states told their delegates to render the federal Constitution adequate for the exigencies of the Union. Most of the states didn't even put the words Articles of Confederation in their instructions to the states, or to their delegates, rather. And so the idea that it was a runaway is just a myth that's been perpetrated mostly by liberals in the last 100 years. Warren Berger was a big perpetrator of this myth. And the reason and timing of a letter that's gotten a lot of circulation for where the people get the runaway concerns is because there were about 20 states at that point in time that adopted a call for a convention to reverse Roe versus Wade. And Warren Berger was one of the co-authors of Roe versus Wade. And so he was just trying to protect his pro-abortion legacy. And, you know, he got some conservatives to circulate this letter for us, so it's been confusing to people. But the truth is that you have to stick to the convention and stick to the rules. I personally litigated the case that is the closest to a runaway scenario. When Congress tried to change the rules for adopting a constitutional amendment on the Equal Rights Amendment in the late 1970s, I filed the very first lawsuit challenging the constitutionality of that abuse of the Article 5 process. And the federal court ruled you can't change the rules in the middle of the stream. Now, it wasn't a Supreme Court decision, so it's not a binding precedent, but we cited a bunch of Supreme Court decisions in getting that district court victory, and it's a persuasive precedent. And I think the outcome would be the same. If anybody tried to change the rules in the middle of the stream, I would sue them again. And just like I did on the ERA, I would win again.
Mm. Michael, we just got about a minute left. Tell us what people can expect if they're at this Convention of the States in Williamsburg this week.
Well, people can watch it online. The people that are coming, the delegates have been selected in advance. The almost 100%, very close to 100% of them are existing state legislators, and so but you can watch online, and there's comments you can make and other things, other ways to interact. And you go to the website, conventionofstates.com, and you can participate and watch and just see history in the making.
All right. Mike Ferris, thanks so much for your time and for your commitment to truth. We appreciate you and all that you are doing, certainly for homeschoolers and for the importance of the U.S. Constitution.
Thanks, Bill. It's been a pleasure to talk to you today.